I hear and obey, said Joseph, and betook himself down from the tower to the vulture hut. The guards in front of it lifted their daggers with grins spreading over their peasant faces, for they liked him well. Then they drew back the heavy wooden bolt from the door, and Joseph entered in to the courtiers. They squatted there in their little cubicle, bowed over their own stomachs, with their hands folded on top of their heads. He saluted them with the utmost refinement, though not in such an affected manner as he had seen in Horwaz, the scribe of the great gate. However, it was a greeting à la mode, with raised arm and a smile, and the formal wish that they might live the lifetime of Ray. They had sprung up as soon as they saw him, and overwhelmed him with questions and complaints. "Who are you, young man?" they cried. "Are you well or ill-disposed towards us? But at least you have come. At last somebody has come. Your manners are good. They suggest that you might feel with us, and see how impossible, how intolerable, how indefensible our situation is. Do you know who we are? Have they told you? We are the Prince of Menfei, the Count of Abodu, Pharaoh's first inspector of bakestuffs, and he who ranks even above the first scribe of the buffet, his sommelier general, who hands him the cup on all the greatest occasions, the baker of bakers and the butler of butlers, master of the grape in the garland of vine. Is this clear to you? Have you come here in this knowledge? Can you picture to yourself how we have lived, in pavilions faced with azurite and diorite, where we slept upon down and had special servants to scratch the soles of our feet? What will become of us in this hole? They have put us into this bare room. We have been sitting since before dawn behind bolts and bars, without the least attention paid to us. Curses on Zawi Ray! Curses, curses! There is nothing here, nothing. We have no mirror, we have no razors, no rouge box, no bathroom, no place to satisfy our necessities, so that we are forced to restrain ourselves, though they are more urgent than usual on account of the strain we have been under, and we have cramps. We, the arch-baker and the master of the vine, is it given to your soul to feel that this situation of ours cries to heaven, or do you only come to observe whether our misery has reached the uttermost? High and noble sirs, answered Joseph, calm yourself. I am well disposed towards you, for I am the captain's mouthpiece and adjutant, and trusted by him with the office of overseer. He has made me your servant, who am to ask after your commands. And as my master is good and even-tempered, you may infer my own temperament from his choice of me. I cannot lift up your heads. That only Pharaoh can do, as soon as your innocence is made clear, which I assume, with all due respect, is present and can be made clear. Here he paused a little and waited. They both looked him in the face, one with eyes swimming in vinous emotion, yet hopefully, the other wearing a glassy stare wherein fear and deceit swiftly pursued each other. One would have expected the baker to be like a bag of flour, and the cup-bearer to resemble the slender vine. But on the contrary, it was the cup-bearer who was full-bodied. He was short and plump, with a fiery red face between the wings of the kerchief drawn smoothly over his head, in front of which his thick ears, adorned with stone buttons, stood out. His chubby cheeks, alas, were now quite bristly with a stubble of beard, but they showed that when shaven and oiled, they could shine right jollily. Even the present dejection and gloom on the chief butler's face could not quite extinguish its fundamental trait of joviality. The chief baker was, by comparison, tall and stoop-shouldered. His face was sallow, though perhaps again only by comparison, but also because it was framed by a somber black coiffure, out of which his broad gold earrings peeped out. But there were unmistakably underworldly features in the baker's face. The longish nose was set somewhat awry. The mouth showed a one-sided thickening and lengthening, making it sag unpleasantly, and the lowering brows had a sinister, ill-omened expression. We must not suppose that Joseph would have remarked the difference between the two faces with any easy partisanship for the good cheer of the one, and just as easy dislike for the forbidding traits of the other. By tradition and training, he would be prone to accord to both the jovial and the jaundiced equal respect for their destinies. He would even go further and summon up more cordiality and courtesy towards the man whose features bore the stamp of the lower regions than to him who was already jolly by nature. The beautifully pressed court costumes of the two, with their ample adornment and gay-colored ribbon bows, were soiled and crumpled with travel, but each still wore in plain view the insignia of his high office, the butler a collar of gold vine leaves, and the baker an order of golden ears in the shape of a sickle. "It is not I," repeated Joseph, "who can lift up your heads, nor is it the warden. All that we can do is to ease a little, as well as we can, the discomforts a heavy fate has inflicted on you. You will understand that a beginning has already been made, in that in your first hour here you wanted for everything. From now on there will be something you do not lack. And that, after the complete deprivation, will seem sweeter to you than anything that you had when you still anointed yourself with the oil of gladness, but which, alas, this sorry place can never offer you. You see how well-meaning we were, my lords Count Abodu and Prince of Menfe, in making such a poor beginning. Within the hour you will have two bedsteads, simple ones, but one apiece. An easy chair to use by turns shall join the stools. A razor, unfortunately only a stone one, I apologize for it beforehand, will be at your service, and some very good eye paint, black shading into green. The captain himself knows how to prepare it, and I am sure he will be delighted to give you some if I asked him. As for the mirror, again, it was probably intentional to have it reflect your images not as you at present are, but after you have washed up. Your servant, by which I mean myself, possesses a fairly clear copper mirror, and I will gladly loan it to you for the duration of your stay, which, one way or the other, can only be a brief span. It will please you that its frame and handle are shaped like the life sign. As for bathing, you can get that done at the right of your hut by a couple of guards, whom I will station there for the purpose. On the left side, you can satisfy your necessities. That is probably just now the most pressing matter." "Fine," said the butler. "Just fine for the present, and in view of all the circumstances. Young man, you come like the rosy dawn after the night, and like cooling shade after the heat of the sun. Health and strength to you, and may you live long. The master of the vine salutes you. Lead us to the left side." "But what did you mean," asked the baker, "by one way or the other, in connection with our stay, and by a brief span?"
"I meant by that," Joseph answered, "in any case, quite certainly, beyond a doubt, or something reassuring of that sort. That is what I meant." And he took leave for the time of the two gentlemen, bowing somewhat more respectfully before the baker than before the butler. Later in the day he came back, bringing a draught-board to amuse them, and inquired how they had dined. They answered, more or less in the sense of, "Oh, well," and asked for roast goose. He promised they should have something of the kind, a roast waterfowl, for instance, and some sort of cake such as the poor place afforded. Further, they might have an hour's target practice, or a game of skittles under the eye of the guards on the court in front of the Vulture House. They had only to command. They thanked him very much, and begged him to thank the captain as well for so thoughtfully arranging that they could now so greatly enjoy these indications of amelioration after the utter baldness of their beginning. They had conceived a great confidence in Joseph, and kept him in talk as long as they possibly could, with thanks and complaints, both that day and the following one, each time he came to inquire after their welfare and their commands. But in all their volubility, they did not depart from their silence on the ground of their presence here, but showed the same reserve which Mysacme had shown in his first talk about them with Joseph. They suffered most on account of their new names, and repeatedly implored him not to believe that these were their real ones in any sense whatever. "It is so very delicate of you, Usarsif, dear youth," they said, "that you do not call us by the absurd names which they put on us when we were arrested. But it is not enough that you do not let them cross your lips. Even to yourself you must not call us so. You must believe that we do not go by such indecent names, but quite the reverse." "That would be a great help, for we are distressed lest these fantastic names which are written in indelible ink in our papers and the proceedings of our trials in the writing of truth should gradually take on reality, and we be so called to all eternity.
Do not distress yourselves, my lords, answered Joseph. That will all pass. After all, at bottom it is a kindness. They had given you a disguise to wear under your present circumstances. Thus your real ones are not betrayed in the writing of truth. In a way, it is not you at all who appear in the papers and indictments. It is not you who sit here, but hated of God and scum of Thebes who suffer under your deprivations.
They were inconsolable.
Ah, but it really is us, even though incognito, they lamented. You are so tactful that you still give us the fine titles and decorations we wore at court. Distinguished in Menphe, Prince of the Bread, and His Eminence the Great Lord of the Wine Press. But no, if you do not already, they took away all these names when they arrested us. We stand here practically as naked as when the soldiers pour water over us at the right of the hut. All we have left is scum of the earth and hatred of God. That is the horrible thing.
And they wept.
How ever is it possible, Joseph asked, looking away just as the captain had done, how is it possible, however in all the world can it have happened, that Pharaoh behaved to you like a leopard of Upper Egypt and like the raging ocean, and his heart brought forth a sandstorm like the mountains of the east, of such a sort that overnight you are shorn of your honors, arrested on suspicion, and snatched off down here to us?
Flies, sobbed the butler.
Chalk, said the chief baker. Both looked the other way, but each in a different direction. However, there was not much resort in the hut for three pairs of eyes. Their glances met by mistake, then quickly shifted, only to meet again, whither ever they traveled. It was a depressing game, and Joseph would have ended it by going away, as he saw that there was nothing to be got out of them save flies and chalk. They did not want to let him go. They kept trying to convince him how untenable was any suspicion of guilt, how preposterous the names Mesedzure and Binimwese.
I implore you, good youth from Canaan, dear Ibrim, said the butler, listen and see, how could it ever be that I, good and happy in Thebes, could have anything to do with such an affair? It is absurd. It is contrary to the order of things. It stands to reason that it only proceeds from misunderstanding and slander. I am the chief of the wine of life, and carry the staff of the grape before Pharaoh when he goes in procession to the banquet, and the blood of Osiris flows in streams. I am his herald, crying hail and health, swinging my staff above my head. I am the man with the garland, of the wine wreath on the head, and the foaming beaker. Look at my cheeks, smoothed as they are now, albeit with a bad razor. Are they not like the bursting grape, when the sun has brewed the sacred juice within it? I live and let live, crying all hail and all health. Do I look like one who measures the coffin for the god? Have I any resemblance to the ass of Set? One does not hitch that animal to the plough with the ox. One does not put wool and flax together in one garment. The vine does not bring forth figs. And what does not go together, never can. I beg you to judge by your good common sense, as one who knows the laws of opposites and makes distinctions, who understands what is possible and what not. Judge whether I can have any share in this guilt, or partake at all in what is so impossible to me.
I can see, said Prince Mesedzure, the chief baker, looking the other way in his turn, that the Count's words have not failed of their impression on you, man of Zehai and gifted youth. Indeed, they were compelling. Your judgment must inevitably speak in his favor. Therefore, I also appeal to your sense of justice, convinced that you will not want for reason and worldly common sense in passing judgment in my own case. You have perceived that the suspicion we high officials labor under is inconsistent with the sacred office my friend here holds. So you will surely agree that one can even less reconcile it with the sacredness of mine, which is, if possible, still greater.
It is, in essence, the oldest, the earliest, the most exemplary. A higher there may be, a deeper never. There is a consummateness about it, as there is about everything from which a descriptive adjective derives. It is the holy, the very holiest of the holy. It speaks of the grotto and the cavern into which one drives swine to sacrifice, throwing torches down from above to feed the primeval fire that it may burn to warm and expand the forces of production. Therefore I bear a torch before Pharaoh, not swinging it above my head, but holding it seemly and priest-like before me and before him when he goes to the table to eat the flesh of the buried god, which springs forth to the sickle from below and out of the depths that received the oath.